just for you, Patrick. We've got the Whippersnapper. He's now producing for Chuck and Julie, so I understand this is your theme music, and it is very, very appropriate. How are you this morning, my friend?
Hey, doing well. How about you?
Good. You know, I knew you before you were somebody, and one of the things that I really like about you and your family is being in politics hasn't changed you as far as what you believe in, how strongly you stand on the principles that you were raised with. Doesn't mean you don't evolve or learn or, you know, change approaches or whatever. But you're the same Patrick Neville that served his country, that survived Columbine, that you were before you got into politics. You bring that same level of integrity to the job you're doing right now. And I just want to thank you for it before we dive in.
Oh, I appreciate that, Randy. Yeah, it's just, I think it's important to have a good, solid foundation and never really back away from that foundation. And I'm lucky to be surrounded by a bunch of good people and had a wonderful foundation coming in into office, and continue to surround myself with good people like yourself that always hold me accountable if I ever step away. So I think that's part of the success I've had.
Well, it's so important. We wrapped up with Representative Massey in the last segment, talking about the politics of things. I asked, you know, what is it with Republicans? The Democrats are always, whether in the minority, the majority, on the losing side of an issue or whatever, they always find a way to fight, to be on the offensive. And so often we have Republican politicians who are always looking for, you know, media favoritism, how to get along, something that sounds reasonable. And the only tool that people like you and me, and you're an elected official, but you also vote for others, the only tool that we actually have at the end of the day is our vote. And these politicians have to earn it. They have to be reminded that they work for us, not the other way around.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, like you said, the other side fights continuously year-round. I think we need to do the same thing. That's what we've started doing. And I definitely amped up our efforts on the grassroots side and tried building up a foundation there, because the Democrats have been beating us on that for decades in Colorado, and we aim to change that. And it's pretty amazing. You watch how some of this stuff happens. You do this stuff and they start getting scared, and you'll see a story on Colorado polls that immediately gets attention from other media outlets, and it's like almost like they're looking for things to attack us on. And the way they're trying to go after, you know, the large donor base now, making it seem like it's somehow outrageous that Pat Neville would write an email to folks asking them to support us, asking us to help us stop the Polis agenda. It's like, really? It's no secret that I'm not really a fan of the Polis agenda, but they're trying to make it like, oh, this is outrageous. This is new stuff. And maybe it is new stuff because Republicans haven't done this in the past, but I think it needs to be done, and I don't think that's outrageous at all. It's not a surprise to me that Republicans would oppose a Democrat governor. It's certainly not a surprise to me that Democrats are opposing the president right now, but that doesn't seem outrageous to the mainstream media.
Well, that's to be expected, because anyone who supports the president is a racist, and that's because the president is a racist. Didn't you know?
Right. Amazing how that's the narrative. But yes, you don't support Polis's agenda, and you don't support Polis. That's outrageous. You work with them. How can you work with them and not support his agenda?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And a reminder to folks, dismisspolis.com. Dismisspolis.com is one place to go to get a petition, to find out where to sign a petition. The petition gathering is still, signature gathering is still ongoing. And then you, the Republicans, or one of your political committees has set up a website as well. Let's have that one, and then we'll jump in on guns.
Yes, it's recallcolorado.com, and we support any recalls against Democrats, and we are willing to give you the tools you need, whether it's if you want to recall a legislator, if you want to do that, we'll give you the idea of what we think is the best chance you have in that district. But if you want to still go forward, we'll give you the platforms to do that on. Be willing to help you out with fundraising efforts, things like that. So we're willing to work with any of the different groups out there. We're not trying to control it all, but just kind of be a resource for all the groups that are out there.
Talking with Colorado State Representative, he's the House Minority Leader here, Patrick Neville. And primarily, I brought you on to talk about your conversation with the president on Red Flag. That's the underlying theme of this show. But just got a text in at the 710KNUS app, text to the studio. Love the texts that come in. But I've got an answer for this question. I want to hear yours. An unidentified texter writes in, "What if everyone had a gun? Think about it. Mull it over." I'll give that one to you first.
Well, if everyone did, then we definitely need to definitely encourage some good training and everything else. But you know, there's other countries out there where they actually do. Like Switzerland has, you know, a law where every basically adult male has to have a fully automatic weapon in their house, and it's part of they all serve as part of the military, and it's actually a very peaceable country.
Israel,
so, I think, yeah, Israel is another one where. If you go visit there, there's you'll see people walking around with ARs or Tavors. Tavors are getting really popular with the military out there, and they'll just be walking around Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. And it actually made me feel safer when I was over there.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I shouldn't say always, but I have often said at my Tea Party meetings and other places where I've been a speaker or an MC. Or a host of some kind, that at this moment, this is probably the safest building, the safest square block in Colorado, because I know that very many of the folks in the audience are peacefully, lawfully, constitutionally, and patriotically carrying their firearms. And so we're not a soft target. We're not the place one of these crazed people are going to come. And for this texter, who in looking at some of earlier texts from this person seems like a very thoughtful texter, I would just encourage you to actually look at the statistics. Crime and murder is way down in the USA as compared to the 90s, while gun ownership continues to climb. And crime goes down in states with more liberal conceal or constitutional carry laws. The places that have the most crime, Baltimore, Chicago, have some of the most restrictive gun carrying laws in the country.
That's right. You know, and it's never anything that I would want to mandate someone to do. That would go against my principles too. But if you do look at it, yeah, like you were saying, the states that have constitution carry, the states like you look at, take a look at Utah if you want to look at mass shootings, especially in school areas and stuff. Utah doesn't have gun-free zones in their schools. They haven't had a mass shooting in Utah in any school. So I think it is a great deterrent to prevent these people from trying to commit these, because they know they're not going to be facing a soft target.
Absolutely. An armed society is a polite society. And, you know, at least if you had the assumption that someone was armed, you could see them coming if someone crazy is intent on doing harm. But the point is, someone who's intent on doing harm is going to do it anyway, whether you're able to defend yourself or not, regardless of the laws that you put into place. There's just simply no way to stop evil in the society. That's a cultural problem. We're talking about political solutions or trying to stop more, you know, won't work, but sound good, government fix it type of solutions, primarily red flag law. The reason that I wanted to have you on is because of a conversation you had with the president about red flag. The president gave another great rally in New Hampshire a couple of nights ago. And here's what he said about the Second Amendment. Very short clip.
And people can't get proper care. They're seriously ill people and they're on the streets. We can't make it harder for good, solid, law-abiding citizens to protect themselves. We will always uphold the right to self-defense, and we will always uphold the Second Amendment. We will.
And just before that, in a longer clip I didn't want to play, he talked about the fact that it's not the gun that kills somebody, it's the person that pulls the trigger. You've actually talked with the president about red flag. When you hear that kind of campaign rhetoric, obviously very, very big among Trump supporters and hunters and legal gun owners across the country, do you believe them?
I do. You know, it's one of those things that when, like I said, the first time I met with them, we had this kind of private meeting with the staff, and there was a bunch of us in the Roosevelt Room, and the staff was trying to talk about, they were calling it GVROs, gun violence restraining orders, which is basically the same thing as a red flag. And they were saying, you know, hey, look, we have to do something. We've had a lot of success talking about these, so maybe talk about this. And you know, the meeting kind of got cut off early because the president walked in and let the media come in. And you can actually watch the portion from that whole portion when the media comes in. And it was, you know, I think I had an interview at 4 in the morning the previous morning, and then was in session up until 10 and took a red-eye flight out there. So I'm on literally no sleep for probably over 40 hours, and I'm just sitting there going, wow, I'm sitting here. President walks in, starts bashing the media, starts, you know, calling lightweight reporters out by name right in the Roosevelt Room. I'm like, is this really happening? They start going around, they're kind of talking about different stuff, and then it gets to me, and I talked about the need to get rid of gun-free zones and let teachers and other armed people protect their students in schools. And he really latched onto that and really went out on that idea in a big way. And then that was pretty enlightening to be there in that, and the way to hear him talk about that and really support that idea. And then
Patrick, since we're coming up on the break and you're about to get to the real meat of the matter, can we take a pause here and have you finish that story? I don't want to cut you short. This is very, very important. All right, very good. Yeah, we're about 21 minutes until 8 o'clock. We'll be joined by Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams around 8:25. We'll do some calls before that. But we're going to continue our conversation first with the State Minority Leader, Republican Patrick Neville, and his conversation with the president on red flag laws, etc. So don't you go anywhere. It's Wake Up with Randy Corcoran, and you're listening to 710 KNUS.
We now return to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Motor City Madman, Second Amendment warrior Ted Nugent, perfect bumper music for the conversation today, which has mostly been about anti-red flag, anti-gun grab, no compromise on certain issues. We cannot give in to Democrat successful, usually incrementalism. Republicans so often willing to cave, go along to get along. And so grateful that we have a few people who just don't look at life that way. My friend Lori Sane, former state representative, soon to be Weld County Commissioner. Our 8 o'clock guest, 8:25 actually, Weld County Sheriff Steve Reams. And if you missed the hour that we had with Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massey, a real expert, chairman of the Second Amendment Committee in Congress, boy, go back and get that podcast right now at 710knus.com and listen to it when this show is over. But right now we continue our conversation with one of those rock stars, Patrick Neville. And Patrick, you were getting into your conversation with President Trump, the exhaustion, the media, the president immediately going on the attack. And before we get into the meat of the conversation, when President Trump became president and was still, you know, being vilified every day, 92% negative coverage on TV and in newspaper, etc., and simply took on the media aggressively. Were you taken back by that? Did you think it was a bad strategy, or did you recognize it at the time for the crucial change in kind of politicking that more Republicans need to learn if we're going to win elections in 2019, 2020, and beyond?
Oh, no, I recognized it right away. I mean, I know how the press works even here locally, and it's not too far off from the way it is nationally, but you see it nationally, it's even worse. So it was surreal seeing it in person, for sure, in that meeting when he just walked in and started calling out lightweight reporters personally.
He is a force of nature, isn't he?
He is, certainly.
All right, so you said it was about a week later. You received a phone call?
Yeah, a week later, I received another phone call. Similar thing. Invited back out to the White House. You know, just like this time, I really don't know what to expect. You just kind of hear it's a meeting of people. So you show up to the White House, get checked in. This one was actually more private. And this one had some other different people that wasn't all the same people that was in the first meeting that I had. But it had some other different people in there. And basically, they started off the meeting. We didn't wait too long, didn't have too much staff, and they kind of, the staff, the people they invited were a mixed bag of people. I got to meet some really good people that actually did lose a children at Parkland who were just basically saying they don't care about guns. It wasn't their issue at all. They just wanted to fix this and, you know, basically, hey, we secure our courts, we secure everything else. Why can't we secure our schools? Just don't care about guns. Leave it out of the conversation. You guys could have that discussion later on. That was basically their message to the president. It got to a few others that were more on the liberal side of it. You know, some school board members from other areas that kept pushing gun registration and red flag laws. And then kind of other people just started talking about even how Mike Pence had signed one of those and he was in the room. So that kind of conversation kind of kept getting more and more pro red flag laws. And then it got to me and I knew I didn't have much time, but I knew that I had a little bit of time and had to use it properly. And so I basically reminded the president that everything they were talking about besides red flag was actually in place at Columbine High School and it wouldn't have stopped Columbine. You know, whether it be assault weapons bans, whether it be background checks, none of that would have stopped Columbine because the assault weapons ban was in place during Columbine. The background checks wouldn't have stopped Columbine because they actually had their guns purchased through straw purchases, so it wouldn't have stopped them at all.
And just for people who don't know or maybe just joining the show, State Representative Patrick Neville was a high school student during the time of the Columbine, was a high school student at Columbine, and you were there during the Columbine shooting.
That's right. And so reminded him of all that and then basically told him red flag wouldn't have stopped this either because there's really no way to identify these people in the manner that would actually keep in due process. But then the other thing I told him too is that the biggest thing that's not being talked about is what this is going to do for the stigma for those actually seeking mental health treatment. And I told him about a story about a friend of mine who was seeking mental health treatment through the VA. And when Obama put in his policies administratively to the VA saying people that had mental illnesses couldn't obtain their firearms, his response was to stop seeking treatment entirely. So, you know, I told him you're going to drive more people underground and they're going to be afraid to come out and actually seek mental health treatment. You're going to have vets that are labeled with PTSD as though there's some sort of crazy people that need to have their guns taken away when really they're just trying to get some help for their PTSD and they've probably never hurt anyone. And reminded him of all that, and that's about all the time I had. And this meeting was different. He didn't really respond or anything. The media wasn't there, so he just sat there and listened and then went on to the next person. And then I made sure afterwards I tried to talk to his staff and different cabinet members and stuff and really try to push that this is a bad idea. This is a dangerous law. I think it could be turned deadly. And just try to get a little bit as much influence as I could while I was there and left. And that was really it. So it wasn't, I can't say that I'm the guy that, you know, talked him out of it or anything. And I don't even know if he still talked out of it. I think it's, you know, last week I was a little concerned, but that's kind of the way President Trump is. He thinks out loud. This week he's kind of changed his tune on some of these things. People don't give him credit, but he's not just a bull in a china shop. He actually does things pretty strategically and does listen to people. But he's like a business guy. He thinks out loud, says what he's thinking, and everyone just takes that because they're so used to us politicians being so very scripted that, okay, this is what we're going to say. These are the talking points that we want to get out, and that's it. So they're used to that by the time it gets to the public that we're just so scripted, where President Trump really isn't. He thinks out loud, and I saw that firsthand in the first meeting. He came in with this probably about 3 pages of, you could tell it was talking points and stuff probably given to him by the staff. And he kind of started off with that for maybe like the first sentence and then looked up and then just went totally off script.
Well,
and started calling them lightweight reporters and whatnot. So he thinks out loud, listens to people, and I think he does carefully make decisions.
My beautiful, intuitive wife was a very early Trump supporter, even while I was an elected Ted Cruz delegate and, you know, fighting the fight at the national convention and then taking some time after the convention to absorb what a family member had told me about how great Donald Trump is with women and the people around him. Someone, this family member's been on the plane, been to Russia with him, been to his weddings, etc. And a lefty. She's, you know, not someone who would be a political supporter of Donald Trump, but she created the possibility for me to see Donald Trump differently from the way the media was portraying him. But my wife, an early supporter early on, she said, I can explain exactly to you why Donald Trump acts the way he does. And I said, why is that? She said, he's a Gemini. I am married to a Gemini. I get it. There are about 14 personalities going on at any given time. The brain that is working super, super fast. And what is on your mind comes out of your mouth. That just seems to be kind of the nature of Geminis. If you look up, and you know, astrology, all that, I don't know. But it does seem like certain astrological signs tend to fit the folks that that wear them. And that applies to the president as well. We've been talking about red flag quite a bit, Thomas Massie. And in the minute or two that we have left, Patrick, was there any consideration by the Democrats in this last session when they passed this aberrant, no due process, red flag bill about mental health? Did they even want to talk about how maybe they could have strengthened the mental health laws, made it easier under that system to get someone who is actually diagnosably having a problem, you know, get access to them or their guns? Or was it very blatantly obvious that this was nothing more than another effort of Democrat gun grabbing?
Well, it's blatantly obvious that the goal was gun confiscation. In fact, they said that too. They said, well, if you want to put them in some sort of treatment, you're taking them away completely. We'd rather just take their guns. And my point to that was, you're still leaving plenty of other avenues that they could hurt people. And in fact, you've probably aggravated them at that point if you've taken their guns, that maybe that you did put them over the tipping point. And look, this is pretty personal to me too, because had those propane tanks went off at Columbine High School, I probably wouldn't be doing this interview with you right now.
Yeah,
because I was there earlier, right next to those things, and didn't know they were there. But that's not common knowledge. Those were there, and they would have hurt a lot more people than the guns ever hurt at Columbine. And so, but no, they didn't want to talk about mental health at all. We actually ran an amendment to it that would have been a strike blow. It would have addressed the right now someone to be put into a mental health hold has to be in imminent danger. So we wanted to kind of lower that threshold or give maybe a little more leeway into that. So it didn't have to be that they're just about to kill themselves or others. Maybe it's, you know, there's other signs that, so kind of loosening that restriction a little bit, but actually getting them help.
Yes.
Because last thing we want to do is just take away what we think we've taken away, all the guns, from someone who is in danger of hurting themselves or others. And then we leave everything else out there they could go out and hurt people with. That makes no sense. But that was the goal of the Democrats, was gun confiscation from the very beginning.
You and I were at the Centennial Gun Club presentation on Red Flag. You and Lori Sane, there was a lawyer there, another lawyer there. I was emceeing because Peter Boyles couldn't make it. And are you going to be at the subsequent, the future Red Flag sessions at Centennial as well?
Yes, I plan on the next one is the 21st.
Yep, August 21st. That one is sold out. They're free, but it's full. And there's another one being set up. I don't think it's full yet in September. People can go to CentennialGunClub.com/Peter for Peter Boyles and see if there are any seats left. But I plan to be there regularly as well. This is an ongoing conversation that we have to have with concerned citizens in the hope that they don't just come and listen and learn, but they come, listen, learn, and then advocate as well when they leave that room.
Yeah, that's the hope. I mean, it's pretty depressing bill when they say, well, what about this? What about this? And there's not a lot of good answers for a lot of these folks, because the bill is poorly written and can really lead to some really bad things happening. But people need to know, need to be aware, and then also educate others too, because there's a liberal narrative out there that is trying to push that these are some just compassionate thing, but it's really could be dangerous. We've seen these laws be lethal in other states, and we really need to be aware of them.
Well, Minority Leader Patrick Neville, you're always a tremendous voice of reason and a pillar of strength. It was good to see you at the Susan Beckman rollout last weekend. Hope you have a great weekend with your family. I know we'll have you back often. God bless you, sir, and take care. Thank you much.
All right. Thanks, Randy.